Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, have you engaged in a good staring contest recently?
I'm trying to do it with you right now. Don't blink. Ah, you blinked.
I didn't, did I? I kind of like narrowed my eyes. Maybe you see the thing is you never know when you blink sometimes.
I guess so.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this is something that I used to engage in with my brother all the time.
Yeah? Did you tend to win, or was it a stalemate? Did you just both stare at each other till your eyeballs dried up?
And I don't know. He's pretty competitive, so I probably just got tired of it after a while and blinked just to end it.
Staring is weird. It is a strange thing. I feel like we've touched on this before, but like the more you stare at somebody, the weirder it becomes.
Mm-hmm.
The weirder their face becomes, and they start looking like just alien monster creatures. You know, just because you begin to take sort of the default version of what they look like and deconstruct it.
Well, remember when we were looking at the Bloody Mary studies about staring into the mirror?
Yes.
And if you stare hard enough and long enough, your brain starts to freak out and because it's just staring at that one bit and it's starting to sort of say, oh, okay, I'm going to start throwing all sorts of weird images in here.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully you're not sitting in front of someone and staring at them so intently that that's happening. But you're right. It does kind of cause you to sort of reconfigure everything.
Yeah. Now, I will say in these podcast recording sessions, I tend to make more eye contact with you than I make with most people because we're directly across from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not looking at my notes or staring off into the middle distance, then I'm having to engage with you because this is kind of a conversation performance that we do here.
It's true. And yeah. We're taking visual cues off of each other too.
Yeah.
Like, hey, wrap it up, or hey, yeah that's totally interesting. More and more. So yeah, staring obviously is something that we do as humans for a variety of reasons. And yet it's a bit of a mystery, right?
Yeah. And then there are all these elements too of personal space and machismo.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine sent me some sort of Facebook correspondence because he is friends with all the people he went to high school with. And he follows them on Facebook. So they'll inevitably say just weird and stupid things or things that just don't really sync with your own personal worldview, including like one dude who lifts a lot and maybe doesn't do
lifts
a lot
weight.
Lifts weights,
okay.
Lifts, you know, hits the gym.
Right.
And then he starts off on this whole diatribe that that kind of breaks the world down into those who lift and those that don't, or those that lift a lot and those that don't lift as much.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about like making eye contact with individuals on the train or on the street, and how in implying that every incident of this, mm-hmm. with men making eye contact with each other, that it is a stare down to see who is the alpha, a.k.a. who lifts the most.
Okay, well, that's very interesting for two reasons. One is, and this is anecdotal, of course, but when I've been at gyms before, I have noticed that people who are lifting are always staring at themselves, like, really, like,
yeah.
Have you noticed this? And they don't break.
Like in the mirror?
In the mirror. Yeah. They're, like, staring, almost like the person in the mirror is the aggressor.
Huh.
Okay, so the second thing about that.
Like they're in an ape that doesn't realize that the ape in the mirror is their own reflection.
Right. Yeah. What is that? It keeps staring at me. Can't they see me with all my weight? But I have noticed that over and over again. And David Terberg et al. Of the University of Utrecht in the Netherlands and some other researchers, they wanted to see if this is really true, that we stare for dominance, that this is really automatic for humans. So they devised a test in which participants were presented with different colored ovals and different colored dots. Mm-hmm. Seems pretty straightforward, right? What they were advised to do is to try to...
They're popping up on the screen in front of you.
Yeah, those ovals are popping up on the screen. They're the same color as the dots, and they're saying, hey, just visually match that oval to the dot when it comes up. But they're sneaky, the researchers, because a split second before the oval appears, a face of the same color appeared with either an angry, happy, or a neutral expression. Okay, so what they were doing is they were testing to see how long it took for people to look away from faces with different emotions. And they compared this data with a questionnaire that the participants completed that measured how dominant they were in social situations. So if you had some of those weightlifters here, mm-hmm. no doubt they would rate, you know, pretty high on social dominance. So the results were that people who were more motivated to be dominant were slower to look away from angry faces.
Mm-hmm.
And then people who were motivated to seek rewards gazed at the happy faces longer. So in other words, the assumptions were right here, is that there is a bit of face or eye staring in terms of dominance and trying to say, this is a space that I'm occupying and I'm dominating right now.
It's weird because on one level, I totally buy that.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other, it's like I think about like being on the train and if someone is like staring at me with crazy eyes, I'm going to look away because it just doesn't make sense. Like, why would I engage that person? Like, why would I? It's like, all right, you're an alpha. It's great that, you know, you're covered in your own vomit, but you're an alpha. So I'm going to let you do your own thing.
But that's the extreme, right? That's the crazy eyes.
Yeah.
What if someone is just like, what if there's another you, Robert, who just happens to be across from you staring at you?
Well, I would not stare back, probably. I mean, do I know this other me? Or do I say, oh, that's me. That's my doppelganger.
You don't know you.
I don't know me?
No. You're a stranger.
Okay.
You're like
so
you in the equivalent
stranger.
Of you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just another person of my general make and model.
Yes.
Well, no, I wouldn't want to really make eye contact with them. Why would I do that?
Okay, so I can't believe I'm admitting this, but there's a 7-year-old in my neighborhood mm-hmm. who's kind of a toughie.
Yeah.
And he's always kind of saying like awful things to people. And I mean, he's 7, right?
Yeah.
So you don't take him that seriously. But I have to say that I was backing out of my driveway not mm-hmm. too long ago, and he was like trash talking, and I knew he was trash talking me. Me,
oh,
yeah.
For backing out of your driveway.
I don't know. This yeah. kid, I'm telling you. Anyway, so I backed up the car, and then, you know, I was parallel with him. He's on his bike, and I sat there and I stared. I did the stare thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know at the time that that was what I was doing, but I wasn't going to roll down the window and say, young man, don't trash talk me.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just sat there and gave him the what I now understand was the dominant stare.
Huh.
And we sat there, and it was finally him who broke it. But that was my way of saying, step off, kid. I'm just trying to get to work.
See, now I find that if I'm at the train and there's somebody like that, not a 7-year-old kid that's threatening me.
Yeah. And by the way, I know how lame it is to do a stare off with a 7-year-old. I get it.
But no, you had to put your foot down. I think you did the right thing here.
Yeah. Okay.
But I find that if there's someone that's being a little scary or being a little kind of like, you know, tough guy on the train, like my gut instinct, if I'm thinking about it, if I'm engaging in it and letting my ego engage in this kind of thing, which is probably a bad idea to begin with, my response will be to not acknowledge them at all, to sort of like stare straight past them or through them. So in my own mind, I'm thinking, I'm not engaging with you, so you can't possibly be the alpha in this situation because I can't even see you. You're so non-alpha.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. It's like there's no, I don't
and
see an alpha.
And it sounds really stupid when I actually break it out into language.
It makes sense.
I mean, it's all pretty stupid because it's like the idea of like a dude's on a train having to establish a hierarchy of who's tough and who isn't and who lifts and who lifts more. I mean, it's utterly ridiculous. And my instinct is to just throw it all out and say that it's all just a bunch of malarkey. But I do have to acknowledge these social dynamics exist.
They do, and staring is a really big way to try to ferret out the emotional states of others anyway, right? Because if you were on the train and you saw crazy eyes, you averted your gaze because you knew that was no good. You're not going to lock eyes. That's not good news for you.
They're going to think I want to talk.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't want to talk. In the article, Why We Stare Even When We Don't Want To, by Deanne Musloff, writing for Wired, she says that humans are highly social animals, and rather than remaining among our family or herd from birth to death, we venture out, and we have to do this in a safe way, so we have evolved a rough screening process with the stare. And she says that, you know, your sweeping stare is giving you all sorts of data that gets processed in your amygdala. Now, mm-hmm. This is the area of the brain that is associated with emotions and judgment. And so that's how you deem if a person is safe or if they're dodgy. And you've got that split second reassembly of their face, by the way, while you're doing this, mm-hmm. In your mind's eye. And when you're reassembling that person's face, you're looking for things like, does this person look familiar to me? Does this person have an emotion of sadness, happiness, anger?
Yeah. Do they look like they're a part of my group? Do they look like that they are merely out in my group now because they're lost? Do they look like they have some sort of malicious intent? I mean, yeah, we do all of this without even really thinking about it. In fact, we often do this kind of thing and then feel bad about it. You know, you'll be like, oh, who's that shady guy walking down my street? And then a part of you will be like, no, he probably has a legitimate reason to be here. He might be a missionary or a salesman. Don't jump to conclusions. But there's still that part of your brain that instantly passes judgment.
Right. In the article, it's that whole part of like why we stare even when we don't want to. We're doing this to, again, as you say, like ferret out. Like, is this person here for harm or good or what's going on?
Are they us or are they an other?
Yeah. And they were saying in the article, our Deanne Musloff was saying that if the person deviates greatly from the norm, for instance, if the person had a face transplant, right, that's probably about as much as you could deviate from the norm. Then your stare really gets locked down because now your brain is, again, reassembling the face, trying to make sense of it and knowing that it doesn't make sense. So it's trying to fill in those gaps and you're going to stare longer and longer and longer.
Yeah. I mean, when you encounter any level of disfigurement or even just like mild, not even disfigurement, but even like mild asymmetry.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not mild asymmetry, but say, a symmetry that you haven't seen before, because mm-hmm. you easily get used to asymmetry in any individual's face, or like if one eye is looking off a little bit to the side. But the first time you encounter it, it can be a little off-putting. But if it's something severe, you get into that weird space again where every instinct in your body is to look and analyze and figure out what's going on. But then you feel just increasingly bad about doing it because we've all been told from an early age, because in an early age we don't know,
mm-hmm.
and that's when we do things like stare at a diminutively sized individual in a grocery store and point at them and mm-hmm. ask our mother what they are. My mm-hmm. sister did that. That's when we don't really understand the social constraints we have to work with, and we're told, above all else, do not point at people who are different. Do not stare at people who are different. But we have that strong instinct to do so.
Right. Largely, humans are not being jerks. They're just trying to figure out the discrepancies.
Yeah. Like, I was in a nursing home once visiting my grandmother, and there was an individual there that and I was, again, I didn't want to stare. So I don't even really have a clear vision of what this person looked like in my mind because I didn't go back for more details because it felt wrong. But I remember their face was like just a black hole, and I'm not even sure how that worked. Like on a physical level, but it was weird because there was the pull to stare, and it was a very strong pull, that I just had to really push it down with all the social rules that were in place.
And you do. You have to tell your brain to shut that off, right?
Yeah.
And this is something we do all the time, right? Because we don't want to make others feel uncomfortable with our stares.
Yeah. Well, another aspect of the whole others and us, safe and risk, all, you know, disease factors into that as well. Does this person look like they are healthy? And if they are not healthy, then how does that factor into my acceptance of their presence within the boundaries of my group?
Right. There's your amygdala at work trying to make that judgment.
All right. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we will get into not only the idea of us staring at other people, but the feeling that individuals are staring at us.
Mwah.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. A-S-T-E-P-R-O allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right, we are back. And Robert Lamb, have you ever had the sense that someone was staring at you? You turned around and lo and behold, that person was staring at you.
I do get the feeling that people are staring at me sometimes, but again, since I tend to be more passive, my reaction is to not engage them and to continue looking at my book or out the window. Mm-hmm. Or if I can, but if I can, then I might try to check a reflection to see if I'm being stared at.
To confirm. Okay.
But then there are always those moments too where you look up from whatever you're doing and someone's eyes dart away from you. And then instantly you think, oh, they were staring at me.
Yeah. And I have to say, I've felt that way before. Yeah. Or like you felt like someone was staring at you, happened to turn around, and lo and behold, they were. And this is called the psychic staring effect. It's that idea that you can really sense this. That this might be, you know, another one of our senses that we have. Or the converse of this is that you yourself could stare so intensely at someone else that you could cause them to turn around and look at you.
Like a cartoon effect where the eyeballs like come out of the head and elongate and actually hit something that they're looking at?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it happens all the time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, according to Skeptic, the first scientific studies of what is called PSE were reported in 1898 by British psychologist Edward B. Titchener. He was interested to know if this was a thing. Mm-hmm.
Because it feels real.
It does.
When you're experiencing it, it feels like you were actually sensing someone stares.
Yeah. But now all of the studies he did, they were all negative. So we don't know how many subjects were involved or how actually the studies were conducted, but we do know that his findings at least were negative. But along comes someone called Rupert Sheldrake. And he has done several informal and formal studies that show that PSE is real-ish. You know, his studies would bear that out. Now, others who have tried to replicate the studies get negative results. And when they replicate his studies, by the way, they're using a random process and other strict controls that he has been criticized for not using.
Well, that's a red flag right there. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, it's always a red flag if you can't replicate the results over and over again, right? So I would say, at best, the jury is still out. At worst, it does seem like this is something that is not a thing with a capital T.
Yeah, researching the material, I really had to fall into the suspicion that it is not a thing, that it's merely a combination of two things, really. First of all, it's about superstition.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other side of it is that, of course, it is it's a false positive. Okay. This goes into the whole idea of error management theory, which we've touched on before in discussing, belief in the supernatural, belief mm-hmm. in lucky charms, various things that are not real. So, when it comes to cognition, we have two types of errors, cognition in dealing with situations of uncertainty. You can make a type one error, a false positive, in which we decide that a risk or benefit exists when it does not, okay? So we make a type 1 error when we think that there's a saber-toothed tiger behind us, and then they're not there,
mm-hmm.
okay? Then there's a type 2 error, a false negative, and this entails failing to notice a risk or benefit that exists. So this is when we think there might be a saber-toothed tiger, but we don't act on it, and then we're eaten. So we're like, oh, I don't think there's anything there, and then we're consumed.
So it's better to think that there might be that saber-toothed tiger.
You can argue that nature selects for those who jump to conclusions. Because if I react every time like there's a saber-toothed tiger, mm-hmm. then it's more likely that I will react correctly when the saber-toothed tiger actually comes for me. And likewise, if I always assume there's no saber-toothed tiger on the other side of the high grasses, then I have increased odds of winding up in a saber-toothed belly.
Okay, so that falls in line perfectly with a study in current biology by the University of Sydney called Humans Have an Expectation That Gaze Is Directed Toward Them. I think the title kind of
Because if someone's
everything.
Looking at me, they might have some ill intentions. So it's the same thing.
Yeah, so the idea is that we always think that people are staring at us, or we always expect that they are. So if you feel like there's a sense like, oh, someone's staring at me right now, you may look around quickly and just assume that person is staring at you. Mm-hmm. So the researchers say that this is largely protective, as you say, and that in many primates, a direct gaze is threatening or aggressive. And you'd want to make sure that you didn't miss this, right? You'd want to know if someone was trying to threaten you. So what they did, of course, is they took some participants with computer-generated faces in front of them,
mm-hmm.
and then they made it difficult for the observer, for the participants, by obscuring the direction of the gaze by rotating the head slightly from previous positions. And they asked the participants to judge the relative gaze directions. Overwhelmingly, when they were in these uncertain positions, people were more likely to judge that even this computer-generated face was staring directly at them.
Huh.
So, you know, just the tiniest little bit of the gaze change, they think, oh, it's still looking at me, even when it wasn't.
Hmm.
So that's why the researchers say this is something that perhaps we're just hardwired to believe, that people are staring at us. So if you are, I'm sure you've seen this in the, or noticed this in the train before. If someone is sitting across from you with sunglasses on, don't you for a while think, I know you're staring at me. Quit staring at me. What are you thinking? And then you realize suddenly, okay, they have sunglasses on. They could be asleep right now.
It's true. Yeah. But I often find myself in the past, I don't really wear sunglasses much on the train anymore, but I have worn sunglasses on the train and have thought to myself, I have free rein. I can stare at whoever and wherever I want to. And so I'll stare at this person or I'll stare at that person, you know? So I know if I'm doing it, other people are doing it. So it's just the Wild West out there.
But isn't it just because you don't have that data, your mind goes a little bit crazy and you just assume that you're being stared
at? Yeah, again, I'm going to make that type one error. I'm just going to assume that they're looking at me and then take it either as a compliment or a threat.
There you go.
Yeah.
So the next stage of this research is to try to figure out if this bias, this cognitive bias really, is learned or innate, and what it might tell us about other mental conditions, because it's shown that people who have autism are less able to tell whether someone is actually looking at them or staring at them. And then people with social anxiety, on the other hand, have a higher tendency to think that they are under the stare of others more often. So it's an interesting bit of research there. See what they tease out on that.
Cool. And like I say, I feel like it has direct correlation with a lot of the research that we've looked at in the past about superstitious beliefs and the idea that a lucky charm works, et cetera.
Right. We do it because it makes sense for us to go ahead and believe that this is the case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, we've talked a lot about staring in faces. People are looking at my face. I'm looking at other people's faces. But there's another type of staring that goes around, and that, of course, is staring at body parts.
Yeah, and this is where we get into objectification, right? Mm-hmm. You're not just staring at someone, you're staring at some aspect of that person. We have mentioned this study before, but Sarah Gervais, she's an assistant professor and lead author of the study Seeing Women as Objects, said, "We introduced and tested the sexual body part recognition bias hypothesis that women versus men's bodies would be reduced to their sexual body parts in the minds of perceivers." And this is called global processing of data rather than local. So in other words, what they did is they took images of clothed men and women and they put them in front of 227 people, equally men and women.
Mm-hmm.
And they were shown a sequence of images before two images settled on their screen. One was of the original image and the other showed the groin area.
The groinage, if you will.
The groinage. Yeah. And men and women were more likely to recognize body parts when shown images of women. Okay, again, this is that global. And then both were more likely to recognize the whole image when shown pictures of men. What does it say? It says that we look at men as complete people, whereas women, we look at them in just parts. Men and women.
So we use global processing with men, and we use local processing with women.
Yeah.
Okay. And not to say that we cannot look at women with global processing. And in fact, I would challenge anyone out, I mean, especially the men out there, that if you find yourself using local processing, you know, just sort of without thinking about it, like, oh, I'm looking at that person's butt, like, at least turn on global processing for a minute and think, oh, I wonder what his or her hopes and dreams are. You know?
Well, what I think is interesting about that is that both men and women do it. Mm-hmm. So if I'm on the train and another woman comes on, if I'm not conscious of it, most likely I'm maybe looking at this person in parts as well and not thinking, like, what's she going to have for dinner tonight?
But more like, look at those elbows.
Those are some sharp elbows. I bet they could really deliver a lot of pain. Yes, something like that. But it made me think about Marina Abramović. Okay, so she is a performance artist. We've talked about her before. Fascinating. She has an exhibit or had an exhibit called The Artist is Present, and it was a retrospective of her work over the past 40 years. And she has done a lot with objectification. In fact, in one of her performance pieces, I believe she was naked and she had a bunch of objects around her.
There was like a feather and then there was also a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Was it loaded? I can't even remember that detail.
I can't remember if it was loaded either, but there was a knife. There was all sorts of things. There was a flower.
Mm-hmm.
And she allowed the audience to choose what they might do with those objects. And she said it was awful that overwhelmingly after a period of time passed and one person did something that was sort of out of the norm with one of those objects, other people felt normalized by it. And she had, you know, knives held up to her. She did have one person wielding the gun. And so it was really an exploration of, like, how easy it is to objectify someone, particularly a woman.
Yeah.
So this exhibit that she had the artist as present is really sort of a way, the opposite of that, a way to sort of take that objectification, turn it around on its head. And she would sit across from someone mm-hmm. at a table. And that way the audience member was just one person just sitting across from her, and she would stare at them for 10 minutes and they at her. And that way they had to look at her fully as a human being, and she had to look at them fully as a human being. And it seems pretty like, okay, well, what are you talking about? Why is that art just two people sitting across from each other? But it turns out this is a really powerful experience, because as we discussed in our podcast on performance art, you very seldom sit across from someone and look in their eyes for 10 minutes straight, even your loved ones. And so people just started crying and felt overwhelmingly like they were just in love with her. That was some of the things that were said, that she saw them finally as a person.
Huh.
And here she is, a stranger to them.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal, and may lose value.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
You know, and again, that's one of the things that makes podcasting so weird, because we're in here for like an hour and there's an absurd amount of eye contact going on.
Yeah, but I mean, for 10 minutes, you and I don't just sit there and stare at each other.
Well, no,
that
no.
Would just be weird.
That would be weird. And arguably, it would be a real pain to listen to.
Well, what I think is interesting about what Abramovich was doing is that, and I don't know if she was aware that she was gaming people in mm-hmm. a way, but she was sort of manipulating their feelings. And
she did have an accomplice come behind and take their wallet about 5 minutes in.
She did.
Yeah.
That's
how they funded the whole thing.
Well, you know, you got to get creative in the arts. In Jay Kellerman's paper, Looking and Loving, The Effects of Mutual Gaze on Feelings of Romantic Love, researchers took 72 unacquainted undergraduate students, split them into male-female pairings, and then they studied the effects that 2 minutes, just 2 minutes of uninterrupted mutual eye contact had on their feelings toward one another. And they found that if the two strangers gazed into each other's eyes for those 2 minutes, they later reported that they had increased feelings of affection or even passionate love toward that person. Now, they did this in other ways where they weren't asked to actually, like, actively stare into each other's eyes, but just be with each other for 2 minutes. They were free to look at the person's hands or so on and so forth. And in that case, they did not report those feelings.
Huh.
But there's something about connecting, staring into the eyes for that long, uninterrupted, that causes those feelings. And so I wasn't too shocked when I began to think about some of the things that popped up from Abramovich's performance. Like, there's a website called Marina Made Me Cry, or Marina Abramovich Made Me Cry. Because that's the sort of deep held feelings that are in there that when you connect with a person on that level, they come out.
It reminds me, too, the study of the excellent documentary films, Baraka and Samsara,
mm-hmm.
both by the same filmmakers. Have you seen either of those? I assume you've seen Baraka.
I've seen Samsara.
Oh, you have seen Samsara.
Yeah,
okay.
And I've seen Baraka, but that was a long time ago, and I wasn't so about it, and then you were terribly mortified by that.
Well, as you'll remember, in both of these films, and this is not a technique that's limited just to Samsara and Baraka, but they'll have these scenes where there'll be an individual from a different culture, and they'll just be standing there, filmed,
mm-hmm.
staring at you.
Mm-hmm.
So, in a sense, you're forced to make eye contact with this individual and connect with this subject of this portrait,
mm-hmm.
not only as a subject, as an object, but as a person. And it's really emotionally evocative.
Right. Again, because now you're considering them as the whole.
Yeah.
Because
you're watching them breathe, and you're staring into their eyes.
I'm saying you exist.
Yeah.
I exist.
Yeah, and then someone next to you in the theater says, shh, cut that out. Quit talking to the screen. Quit telling the screen it exists. We're trying to watch a movie here. But going back to the old staring contest,
mm-hmm.
And I wasn't really prepared for the staring contest. I'm not trying to get out of losing it, but I've kind of forgot what the rules were. Because apparently the rule is not that you lose by looking away,
mm-hmm.
but you lose by blinking alone, which seems kind of silly.
Yeah, but that's the dominance factor, right?
Yeah.
Like, I will not blink, and I will be so intense and aggressive that I will win this. I need to have a rematch with my brother, clearly.
You do. You do. Maybe you can do it over Skype or something.
Yeah, yeah. I think we're going to. FaceTime, maybe. So, of course, blinking, though, is inevitable, and we do it something like 15 to 20 times a minute.
Well, we have to. It lubricates the cornea, and if you're not blinking enough, it's not good for the eye.
Right, and it's dislodging little bits of dirt and dust that get in there. But this is a really interesting revelation that has recently come out. In a 2012 paper published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of the Sciences, researchers found that people tend to blink at predictable moments, and they blink a lot more than they need to. So you don't need to blink 15 to 20 times a minute just to lubricate your eyeball or dislodge something. So you've got these predictable moments that mm-hmm. you blink at. So if you're reading, you tend to blink at the end of each sentence. If you're listening to someone speak, you may blink when the speaker pauses between statements.
Mm-hmm.
And if a group of people are all watching the same video, everyone tends to blink at the same time when the action briefly lags.
I was trying to remain conscious of my blinking just now, and I did find that I would blink whenever you would have a stop in the sentence.
I know. Actually, I wish that we had given everybody a tip-off before I read that to see if they were doing the same thing. But maybe you guys out there are being aware of that as well.
Well, as I say this, think about when you blink. 'Twas Brilg and the Slithy Toads did Gway and Gimble in the Wave. When did you blink? You know, I think it might have matched up with the
gazoon tight.
Yeah.
So there's more to it, though. This is the really cool thing. It's blinking, it turns out, is a way that we get a quick refresher for our brains.
Yeah, in a sense, we're resetting the visuals that we're taking in, which
mm-hmm.
which I find really interesting. It's like I'm looking at a painting, and then I blink. And maybe I'm looking to a new part of the painting and I'm seeing it anew. Each time we blink, we're kind of reestablishing the scenario for the brain. In a sense, we're kind of updating the image, like a security camera that doesn't have a constant stream but merely updates every few seconds.
It's refreshing and refocusing. And of course, someone tested this out. Tamami Nakano, along with other researchers, scanned the brains of 10 volunteers in an fMRI machine while they watched. Okay, check this out. Mr. Bean. Why Mr. Bean, I do not know. But they watched the show Mr. Bean while they were being scanned. And it turns out when the volunteers blinked, the activity correlated with increased blood flow to the default mode network, which we know is the seat of midline chatter in our brain, but also is associated with a state of rest, or rather wakeful rest. So the Mr. Bean show also contained momentary blackouts. So those were built into the shows. And volunteers would see nothing, and these blackouts actually lasted for the same amount of time that a blink does. And what they found is that the brain did not respond in the same way.
Hmm.
And that the area that's related to the default mode network was not activated. And that leads to this conclusion that blinking is something that is that's much more than just a temporary blackout. That it is serving a purpose to refocus our efforts and our thoughts.
So, in a sense, if we're engaging in some sort of like alpha mare stare down and we're not blinking, what we're saying is, yeah, I don't need to reset this. I see everything I need to see right here. I don't need any new information. That's right. That's right. Better step off.
That's right. I'm the Zen master of all stimuli coming in right now. Cones and rods, cones and rods.
So take that in with you next time you're on the train, you're at the mall, you're pulling out of your driveway and there's somebody that needs a serious stare down. Now you know a little more about why you feel this compulsion to either engage with the staring or to run from it or indeed why the blinking occurs, because you're updating the information that is before you.
And probably that person isn't staring at you, but it's good for you to be aware of your surroundings, right?
Yeah, calm down a little bit. You're probably not being stared at unless, you know, there is something like stuck to the back of your shirt or something. And in that case, maybe somebody will say something.
Or toilet paper trailing down from your pants. But don't worry about that. It's just random stuff of life. The little indignities.
All right. Well, on that note, we're going to go ahead and call it a day on this podcast. The robot is on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
So we hope that he's having a great time. Where did he go?
Ibiza.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, he loves the music scene there.
He does, in volleyball.
Yeah, in volleyball. Yeah. So those are his passions, so we hope he's living it up. In the meantime, if you wanted to touch base with us about staring, about blinking, we would love to hear from you. What is your weird social dynamic with individuals in regard to staring? Is there any truth to this whole, like, is the world really about dudes who lift and dudes who don't lift? And then what is it like, what's it like as a woman to engage in this world of staring, in this world of objectification, and the seeing of individuals as a pile of parts rather than a whole? All of that's fair game. You can find us in the usual places. Our main homepage, stufftoblowyourmind.com, Facebook and Tumblr, where we are Stuff to Blow Your Mind, Twitter, where we are Blow the Mind, and YouTube, where we are Mind Stuff Show.
And if you are a lifter and you refute my anecdote about this aggressive staring into the mirror, set me straight. Let me know. Let us know your feelings by dropping a line at blowthemind@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.